So you also have a case here of a 68-year-old lady. Maybe you can go through that one. Former smoker, epigastric discomfort.
So this case one is a locally advanced disease, and again, goes into the difference between, you know, the tumor location and driving the type of operation and the type of neoadjuvant therapy that we would recommend. So this was a 68-year-old woman with a locally advanced endoscopically under endoscopic ultrasound was a T3N1 tumor. And the question is, you know, how would you stage this cancer? And how would you approach the treatment? So for majority of these patients, it's important to rule out metastatic disease. And even on the CT scan, often if the CAT scan is negative, we can pick up occult metastatic disease in 10 to 15% of the patients by FDG, fluorodeinated glucose PET scan. And so these patients tend to develop metastatic disease to supraclavicular and retroperitoneal lymph nodes, which you can miss on the scan. And also in a patient who presents with weight loss and symptomatic cancer, even in patients with a PET scan negative for metastatic disease, a laparoscopy is necessary to rule out occult peritoneal carcinomatosis, particularly in patients where the majority of the tumor is in the stomach. So this patient had a perioperative laparoscopy, which was negative, no evidence of peritoneal disease on the PET scan, and then the primary tumor, the standard uptake value was quite bright, SUV of 14. So what do you do for this patient? And generally, there's a lot of consensus to show that something more than surgery needs to be done. If the tumor was mostly in the esophagus and the higher portion of the GE junction, the consensus is that chemoradiation should be the standard. In this patient, however, the majority of the tumor was at the bottom portion of the GE junction and extending into the stomach. So your classical gastric cardia proximal sort of tumor where the radiation generally is not indicated. And there's some, you know, sway on this data, and certain academic centers still advocate radiation for it. But I would not radiate this tumor, and we elected to treat her with preoperative therapy. Then the question comes up, and actually since this patient was treated, the data has changed. You probably saw Elbatron present the FLOT4 data at the ASCO 2017 meeting. And so in this patient who is otherwise fit and is able to tolerate 3-drug combination, with the current standard, it would be a combination of 5-FU, oxaliplatin, and docetaxel, or the FLOT4 regimen. Before the data came out, you know, the OE05 data, which was presented by Cunningham, showed that epirubicin, or EOX-based therapy, did not do any better than FOLFOX, or 5-FU platinum. And so for this patient in particular, she received FOLFOX as a preoperative treatment.
Do you want to elaborate on that? You mentioned the editorial that you wrote about, you know, the issue of anthracyclines. Can you comment on that?
You know, we need to move this field forward. And the only way to move a field forward, if there's a consensus among experts. Until last year, there were still at these meetings and scientific consortiums, a lot of discussion back and forth, what to use as backbone for clinical trials and so on. And so there's this perceived disagreement. So Jaffer, Johnny, and I thought it was very important to come together and write a statement piece about what, you know, we as experts think and agree on. And so it's basically a summary of pertinent highlights of recent negative studies, including the CLGB study of FOLFOX versus carboplatin irinotecan versus ECX. So the consensus statement was basically to summarize and to show that there's no benefit for addition of epirubicin in metastatic setting, and it should be avoided, and it will help us sort of consolidate all the efforts and advance the field forward if we can agree on what the backbone should be in metastatic patients.
So getting back to your patient, what's her current situation?
So she went on to have surgery. So we actually tend to use the PET scan as an assessment of biologic response. This is based on Florin Lordig's data in the Munichon trials showing that the patients who don't respond to first cycle or 2 cycles of FOLFOX, and the response is defined by change in the SUV on the FDG by 35% or more. So the tumors that don't respond biologically represented more aggressive tumors and should probably either go on to have surgery, or there's also an Alliance trial that looked at switching therapy. So this patient had FOLFOX, responded beautifully, and then went on to have surgery and had 99% treatment response. Again, unusual scenario in this disease, but she had an excellent response. And then there's a conundrum. So she's elderly. She had a complete gastrectomy, total gastrectomy for a proximal tumor. Most of these patients lose up to 10 to 15% of their body weight in the post-op setting. And so nutritionally quite compromised. And so you're seeing this patient who now has a YPT1B N0 tumor. So downstaged from T3N1 tumor. And she's asking you, what should we do? And obviously she is thankful and wants to capitalize on this response and does not want to have her cancer recur, because once it recurs, obviously it's no longer curable. But these in adjuvant setting, even the FLOT4 data and other clinical trials data shows that half of the patients only are able to receive therapy, if we're lucky. And so in this particular patient, she rallied, she did well. She didn't gain weight, but her weight stabilized. And then, you know, because she was motivated and she has a grandchild on the way and everything, you know, a lot to lose and at stake here, we elected to do 3 more cycles of FOLFOX.
And I'm curious what you would predict her prognosis to be, her chance of relapse at this point.
It's a very hard number to predict. And what I tell my patients is they're cured and they should feel they are, and everything else is inconsequential. They shouldn't be Googling numbers and et cetera. But obviously with node negative disease, her chances of recurrence are substantially lower, but they're not zero. And there are new emerging technologies to try to sort of predict when to stop chemotherapy, which patients are less likely to recur. I'm particularly interested in that field and using cell-free DNA as a biomarker to try to hone in better on this risk of recurrence.